On this week's show, very disappointing weekend for the Irish provinces in Europe, unless you're a Leinster fan, of course.
Fortunately, we come up with some potential long-term solutions for Irish rugby.
You're welcome. We will also pick our best crack 15 that we ever played with.
Except at fullback, where no one is any crack.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello, and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. No Trimby this week. Where is Trimby, Pat? Fantastic.
He's lost in France. I think he's away with work, I think. Yeah.
Where are you, Trimby?
Kairos.
He was in France for Ulster versus Claremont. It's just me and Jerry Flannery on the couch this weekend.
Don't sound disappointed.
I am very excited. We can just enjoy our disappointment that Munster are potentially
wallow for a while.
Yeah, the only correspondence I had with Trimby over the weekend was he texted me wondering that if someone knocks on a ball, right, mm-hmm. and it's dribbling along the ground, and you just come along and you volley it, or you half volley it, and it goes over the post, is that considered an acceptable drop goal?
No, I don't think so, no.
Why not?
Because do you not have to be in possession of the ball first?
I don't know.
You've never taken possession of the ball.
Right. You can't just hack the ball over the bar like a...
I don't think so, no.
Now it's for me.
There you go. There you go.
Answer to your question. glad to see you were very...
What did you say to him?
Whoever asked him the question said, say this to Baz, but... I don't expect to.
Are you deemed to be the cleverer of the two of you?
No, I thought so. Halfway through it, I thought so. And then your man finished it by going, but I don't think he has a clue what he's talking about anyway. Okay. So I was like, feck that guy, which I actually don't know. So, but other than that, how's your weekend been?
Weekend was a lot of rugby. Yesterday was disappointing. Everything was building towards the Munster game. Mm. And I thought that they could get a result there, but I think the gulf is just widening now with teams that have more money and more quality then. Mm. And that was apparent. You could see that across pretty much, apart from the Leinster game, you could see it across the three games that the other teams played in.
Yeah, I mean, like 72nd minute, they're still winning. They obviously started very strong, getting 9 points up and... probably did a lot more better than people imagined they'd do.
A lot more better than
a lot
people.
More better.
Munchins, you taught us so well. Man, I thought Munster's effort, all of the things that they needed to have, their effort, their work rate, all of those things were there. Just there's just a gulf in. There was just the Racing just had better quality. That was unfortunate, and you could see that was the same. I could say the same for the Claremont game, Claremont and Ulster. Like, Ulster were unbelievably competitive in all the things that, like, the players can bring to the table in terms of, like, how hard they work, you know, how they commit themselves to contact. Mm-hmm. I think that both sides, but after when you spread it across 80 minutes, it was like Munster were containing Racing. Mm-hmm. I don't think, like, if you look at the opportunities Munster had of scoring a try, like, the Conway one, Munster didn't create for that. That was just, Conway just made a great read. He didn't really have an option. He had to go for it. It was either that or a try for them. And then the other time then was, I suppose, when they went to the corner, did the peel around with CJ off the mall, and then Chris Farrell, Vakatawa, like, very few people would be able to stop Chris Farrell from there.
But yeah, that was
they didn't create a huge amount. They contained Racing a lot, but I felt like in the last, particularly the last quarter of the game, I felt like Racing just started picking them off, like the fatigue of trying to deal with those kind of big men, those ball carriers, and saw the same in the Claremont-Ulster game. I'm not picking out the Connacht-Toulouse game at the moment because I think that was, Connacht and Toulouse was more general, you know what I mean? I felt like Munster and Ulster both were right in the mix for a long time against Claremont and Racing. But I felt like fatigue and the strength of the bench that the French sides were able to bring on, whereas that ultimately paid its price. And if you look at, like, Finn Russell, how accurate Racing were with their handling at times, it was phenomenal. Like, they were ever, I think, Vakatawa was it's like having a back row forward running at full pelt in the middle of the field, and you have Finn Russell just picking off holes. And Vakatawa, I think he did he have eight defenders? But did we have Vakatawa had 16 carries, and Munster, like Munster had 11 missed tackles between Rory Scanlon and Chris Farrell.
On Vakatawa.
I'm not sure on him, but okay. Just they had 11 missed tackles between them through the centre of the field. So like, and I thought as the game went on, I felt that Munster were starting to soak a lot more. You know, you can see the fatigue coming in. Same as Ulster game, you see that they bring on bigger forwards, fresher forwards, and the ball carriers like Munster. I thought Munster's bench didn't have a big impact. I felt that they soaked quite a lot when they came on. And then it just gives them more front football and gives Finn Russell. Finn Russell doesn't need a lot of time to pick out holes in your defence. And that was unfortunate. But I thought, like, thought there was Munster, like CJ had a big, big work rate. I thought Pete worked his ass off. You know, they all tried, but the accuracy wasn't there. Accuracy wasn't there in handling. And that's ultimately it.
Yeah, if so what would you change performance-wise for Munster? What would what could they have done more to threaten the line? Did they go in with the right attitude? Did they go in with the right game plan?
Their attitude is 100%, man.
Sorry, I mean game plan. Did they go in with the right?
Well, like I don't sit in the coaches' meetings, so I don't know exactly what they were going out to do.
Mm.
I felt like their handling was not. I felt it wasn't sharp against Ulster, and it wasn't sharp here either.
Mm.
There was no real handling in the Leinster game. The conditions were poor in that game, but this was indoors. And when I saw how hard, when Munster were in possession, when I saw how hard that Racing were going at the Munster breakdown all the time, they were committing bodies to it. So if they're committing. If they're committing really hard to trying to steal the ball, there's got to be space elsewhere. And I thought when they did get the ball, if they got the ball to width, there'd be a bit more space there. And they'd be also moving the ball a little bit more, making the Racing pack, particularly when the likes of Tammy Afuna are on the field. You want to move them around and shift them and then try and isolate them. But it didn't materialise.
Yeah. The Teddy Thomas try, I suppose, first of all, what an unbelievable piece of skill. I think the camera angles and all that kind of crack we'll get to in a second. But when it happened, I thought Russell, I was there, what is he doing with this kick? And then when he executed, I was like, nice one, he's butchered that.
Mm.
And then Thomas got to it, and then he's celebrating. I'm like, you didn't score that.
You spoofer.
Way you go, Teddy Thomas, you didn't score that. And then they show it. And like, not only does he get the ball down, but he keeps his feet in play at full belt. Like, if you gave me that 100 times and said, Barry, this is going to happen, you got to do this. Like, see if you can do it. I wouldn't execute it once. You know what I mean? But what a finish. Like,
honestly, I think I'd say 3-4 years ago when I first saw him play, I thought he was a little bit windy. And our analyst at Munster, George Murray, did a great piece of analysis on him before we played them. Over in France in the semi-final a couple of years ago, and he just said, watch how he's always looking to step off his wing. Every single time he's looking to get the ball, he's not looking to take in the outside, he wants to step in. And
did he mean that in a negative way?
No, he's just saying that this is what he does,
right?
So expect it,
because he did it last week. He thought he was going to do it, because I know he does that a lot. He came up against Raqqa last weekend for Claremont, and he made a dick of Raqqa for the whole game. And you thought he was going to do that, and Raqqa thought he was going to do it as well. But then the last second, he just pops on the outside and burns him and scores in the corner.
I thought he was kind of a one-trick pony, man, from those couple of years ago. And he was unbelievable that day against us. And when we played him since, and every time I've watched him, he's just gotten better and better and better. I think he's quality. He's absolute quality. Like the difference when you've got someone like Finn Russell, like, he had so little, like, I know he had an advantage for the try, so he could go for that kick.
True.
But he'd so little space and he'd so little time to get that kick away, yet he still got the kick away. And do you remember in the first half, he took the ball down the short side, Finn Russell, and he just out of nowhere just did this little grubber, and Mike Haley actually had to kick it.
Yeah.
He had to kick it over the line.
Yeah.
And I was trying to work, it was so unorthodox, because what would... I think when I was looking at the angles that Teddy Thomas had to chase, and I was there, how would he finish this? He would have had to sort of almost kick the ball himself and bring it back in field. But it's like, That's what makes Finn Russell so hard to defend, because he's so unpredictable. And then when you've got Siobhansi and Vakatawa outside him, like if something's not coming off, you can just go Siobhansi, carry that, yes. or Vakatawa. And then if they've got front foot ball, he can have Siobhansi running a hard line and Vakatawa outside him, like very, very hard to defend.
Yeah.
So when they got, as they started to get front foot, as they started, when Munster started soaking a little bit in collisions, I felt Racing started really coming into it.
Mm.
But yeah, it's...
That try, how they didn't have camera angles for to show whether he was onside. Now, when I slowed it down, like to the, you could see his head entering the screen. I did feel like he was onside.
Yeah.
But how they didn't have, like Mark Robson tweeted last night saying, in his 22 years of experience, the French TV broadcasters will always be like, what TV angle? What TV angle? I don't know any TV angle.
There's a towel over that camera there. What are you doing? Yeah. Nothing.
And there was another camera. So whatever about the offside line, how they didn't have a camera angle, that was beyond me. But there's a camera behind the goals, right in the corner, facing up the pitch, which would have definitely shown whether he touched the town on the line or not. And they didn't have that angle either. When you review games, would you have had all access to all those camera angles?
You generally get four angles. George Murray, the analyst, would be able to stack four angles, which gives you a way better picture.
Mm.
But sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get them.
Nice.
But George would generally be able to pull four angles together from the broadcasters. But
yeah, it was a big moment.
It was massive. It was massive. I thought the Conway moment was one of the biggest, because Racing were really starting to come into it. And I was like, oh shit, like Racing are getting, they're looking really, really dominant. Their handling is crisp. They're picking off holes. They're getting momentum every time they carry the ball. And then Conway was like, it's a 14-point swing, you know.
Yeah.
They would have scored. Munster ended up scoring. Coming in just before half-time as well. And I just think that, it just didn't work out. Wasn't on Munster on the day, unfortunately.
The pressure is off them now, right? They like, when was the last time we haven't qualified for a quarterfinal? I know permutations wise, we'll go through them in a minute. It's still possible. When was the last time we didn't qualify for a quarterfinal?
Four or five years ago.
Like this squad has, they've always been under pressure. You know, it's like every season there are huge moments and you feel like they're stretched a lot. Look, we went through the Leinster strength and depth last week and talked about how many options they have if they lose players across the field. They've got almost three in each position that could potentially play for Ireland at this point. Munster's strength and depth, and you could see it yesterday when, you know, with the bench maybe not being as strong. If you go through it, you know, I know we've Delande coming next year and Snayman coming, but where else do you think they need to bulk up?
I think there's quality in the squad. It's getting game time into them. It's getting the likes of Shane Daly, Craig Casey, getting them to play regularly, getting Jack O'Sullivan to play regularly. It's easier when you're winning. You know what I mean? Like are they 2 from 8 now?
Mm.
So that. If Craig Casey starts the game against Ospreys, like there's going to be a bit of pressure on Craig now. You know what I mean? Like maybe I understand what you're saying, that you say the pressure's off now, but the pressure's always on when you're a Munster. Like we got the semi-finals the last 3 years, and people were pretty irritated that we didn't get further than that. Mm. And I was like, well, like what is the standard that wins you European Cup? It's generally 8 to 9 international starters.
Mm-hmm.
That's generally it. And Munster aren't near that. Munster are probably at half that level. Like Kilcoyne isn't. Scannell hasn't been. Archer hasn't been. Holland hasn't been. Klein hasn't been. Pete and CJ. Murray and Earlsey. So Munster have 4. And if the standard is 8 to 9, Munster aren't getting at that standard. So they need... they need the likes of Jean Klein to go and take James Ryan's place. They need Rory Scannell to be able to... If Munster are going to get to that standard, Rory Scannell needs to nudge Robbie Henshaw out of the Irish team.
Mm.
Stephen Archer needs to take Tadhg Furlong's place. They're the kind of things... Or John Ryan needs to take Tadhg Furlong's place. And I think you can see the gap closing in certain places. You can see Kilcoyne closing on Healy by virtue of Rory Best stepping out. Scannell is closer to starting for Ireland now, but he's probably going to feel a bit of heat from other lads, but I'd say he's in pole position. Farrell is, you know, he's up against Ringrose, who's in incredible form. But that's the standard that's required to win. And if the Munster players are playing better than the Leinster players all the time, they'll be a better team. They'll have a better chance of winning. And I think that, you know, they need to strengthen the squad. And to be fair to them, they have very few non-Irish qualified players within the squad at the moment. So signing Delende and signing Snyman is a good move, and they need them. And then hopefully that they can... And I understand people saying, like, Johan has come out and said, like, give us more time, give us more time. The reality is you don't get more time in Munster. Yeah. You just don't get it. Now, if you were in his shoes, he's saying, well, I got Graham Rowntree in as my scrum coach. I got him in just after the World Cup. Stephen Larkin came in and started late as well. So they should have consistency in their game plan from the point of view that they have 50% of the coaching ticket was there. But it's still, you know, it's still a big ask to try and get everything put together, you know, in a short space of time when you consider when they would have got their top players back from the World Cup. But that's the reality of Munster, is that, like, when, like, I look at it like, in, we were like playing Exeter, we had to beat Exeter at home to win last year, and we had the same thing where we lost to Ulster away, and it was like, oh my god, Munster are going terribly. And then we backed it up by losing to Cast away, which we should never have lost. But you know, then we had the same feeling coming into Exeter at home. And Billy Holland steals a line out towards the very end of the game, makes an unbelievable read, steals a line out. If he doesn't steal that ball, Exeter probably score and we don't go through in Europe. The margins are that fine.
Yeah.
And when you're a coach, you're aware of that, and you're aware that, like, getting to European semi-finals is difficult to do. And the fact that Munster did it consistently for 3 years doesn't mean that, well, the next year they're going to get to the final.
Yeah. And, well, and, like, I mean, you even take the group they're in, like, eight of the quarterfinalists last year, seven of them were in the competition this year, three of them are in the same group, which is crazy when you think about it, but that's the pressure they're under. So to come out of this group is always going to be a massive challenge, to have pushed it, and this, look, we'll go to the permutations now, I think, because we can still qualify, that's the other side of it. If Saracens lose, we need Saracens to lose. We need to win with a bonus point ourselves against Ospreys. Mm. We need Sale to beat Glasgow, so Glasgow away to Sale. We need Gloucester to lose to lose. And we need Northampton to lose to Leon.
Leon, yeah.
All three of those are away, so very good chance they'll lose. But it's whether Racing go to Saracens and play a strong team and can beat Saracens.
Saracens have treated the competition as a second string.
Mm.
Like, they haven't gone full strength. Like, when I saw the team that they put out against Worcester in the league, and then the following week what they put out against Ospreys, it's not been the Saracens that you.
But I think from the get-go in November when this happened, I was like, okay, what Saracens need to do here is get through those Ospreys game with weaker teams, beat Munster at home with a stronger team, and then beat Racing at home with a strong team. So they've done all of the above, and now they will probably put out a stronger team just to make sure they qualify. Because the only way they can qualify for the Champions Cup next year is by winning it.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. Like, if Munster put their second string team out against Racing, against Ospreys, and against Saracens, like, we wouldn't be anywhere near. Like, like I said, the thing comes down to money and depth.
Yeah,
you look at the depth that Claremont have, the bench they can have, the bench that Toulouse had against Connacht. They were able to bring on Rory Arnold, Malvaca the hooker, who a lot of people wouldn't know, but I watched him play 20s for France, and he's a magician. He's unbelievably powerful. Bezzy, Entomac, you know, and Huge. Like, that's what they had on their bench. That's what Toulouse had on their bench. You look at the bench that Racing, like, the players that Racing have, and then the bench that Racing have, and the fact that Donnacha Roine was missing as well was massive. The fact they were missing Zeebo.
Yeah.
What, like... The thing is, for so many things have to go right for the Irish teams. For when I say, I'm talking specifically about, say, Munster and about Ulster at the moment, and Connacht.
Yeah.
Because Leinster are on a different level They're literally on a different level. Even when I watch Exeter, when I watch Saracens, Leinster, the way they're playing is just so much better.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to that one. The 42-14 against, it wasn't Connacht, Pat. It was
Leon.
Oh, sorry.
I was like, what? Their starts are unbelievable. In 10 of their last 14 games, they've scored a try in the opening 10 minutes. Three of those games, they scored two tries in the opening 10 minutes. Max Deegan, again, another excellent game. Two line breaks for Leinster's bonus point try. 21 carries for 71 metres. Dave Kearney having an unbelievable season. Surely back in the line for an Irish start. They're just unstoppable at the moment.
Yeah, and Leon put it to them for a while. You know, Leon put it to them, but it was like it was the reverse. It was like what even when it was close, you're like, Leinster are handling this. It's not perfect. And then Leinster just pulled away as the game went on. And again, like Deegan was class. I think he had 21 carries. Ruddock again, another big game. 19 carries, 4 tackles. And then you have between like contrast the Munster game, like the Munster centres, like Henshaw had 12 carries, 8 defenders beaten. Ringrose had 16 carries, 8 defenders beaten. You know, there's the quality that's required to win a European Cup. You know, like when you have those kind of players.
I felt when like again with Leinster, their ball is so quick, and their prerogative seems to be get the ball out, just quick ball. And McGrath, when he gets the ball in his hands, there's always an option. And then whoever's first receiver has three options. And Munster, I know you were saying Racing put a huge amount of pressure on the breakdown, which they did. And Munster handled it quite well for a lot of it.
Yeah, yeah. Munster's clean outs were decent.
Yeah, and Murray was getting quick ball, and his pass was way longer than that has been. He was whipping big 10, 12 yard passes to JJ, and I thought he was really quick on the ball, but there didn't seem to be always an option for him. You know what I mean? There was a lot of the time there was players in the way coming, they were still retreating from maybe presenting for the previous ruck. It didn't seem like JJ may have had two or three players outside him demanding the ball. Is that a factor for Munster that maybe there's not that confidence that it's like give us the ball, whereas Leinster's just such a habit now where it's like
I don't know is the answer. I don't know, like, because again I'm not privy. I don't know exactly what Munster's game plan is. It doesn't seem to have changed dramatically in terms of when I just look statistically at where Munster were last year to this year in terms of kicking the ball, and you can see that they still operate off a strong set piece base. And you know, knowing the way that Johan likes to coach, I know he's big on mauling, and the aerial game as well is big for him. But Leinster's game is just really, really simple. It's just so simple, and they just do the basics incredibly well. But the Leinster handling is sharp, you know, and I felt that that's somewhere where they're quite a bit ahead of the other provinces. I think Ulster have improved an awful lot. Their handling is slick, but you just saw the momentum bleeds when John Klein or Scanlon would throw, you know, when there was a poor pass, a poor sweep pass, it just kills momentum, which is so hard to generate against the side away from home. So
Leinster churned out players, and it like, do you feel they're coming into the setup out of school with those skills far more than potentially other provinces?
I don't know across the board, but I know that we would attract Jordan Lamore, would attract Andrew Porter coming straight out of school, and they would have been like the difference. I suppose Jordan Lamore is physically, he was as strong, he was as fast as any player in a Munster senior setup when he was in Andrews, and Andrew Porter, anyone doesn't take a ninja to figure out that this guy is physically ready to play senior rugby. Maybe has a good bit to go in terms of his football skills, in terms of his rugby nous. But, you know, most props come out, and if a guy's a really good footballer at 18, 19, he's still got a bit to go to try and get physically as strong as the guys he's going to compete with for his fundamentals of scrummaging and just contact. But Porter was ready to go. So if you consider those two, like those guys came out and, well, like they had, like when a couple of years ago, they had James Ryan, they had Joey Carberry, like Porter, Lemore, like graduating from their academy as, you know, they're full internationals, like, you know, they don't even do a full academy cycle, they're full internationals, where sometimes you're wondering which guy here is going to be a Pro 14 player for us, who's here is going to be, you know, a European Cup player, who here could go on and play Test rugby for Ireland. But when they're graduating straight out, when they're like they're bypassing the 3-year academy cycle and they're internationals already, gives you an idea of.
It seems to have been professionally coached in school.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's the key. That seems to be it, doesn't it?
Do the other teams have that the resources to be able to put that money into schools?
You say the other provinces?
Sorry, yeah.
Well, obviously not. You would say, like, well, I can only work off Munchins and stuff like that, like the clubs that the schools that I know. I know that, like, if a club up in Leinster, or a school in Leinster, or you know, if Clongowes or Michaels can afford to have a full time coaches in there, then that's someone's full time job. That's all they're responsible for. So they're going out, and you know, if you know, they're going to be constantly looking to upskill themselves as coaches and stay relevant to the game. And as the game moves so quickly that they can go in and do a CPD day where they go in and see shadow the Leinster coaches for a day, or Leinster will come out and upskill those guys. And then they're in charge of making sure that the rugby program in that school is top class, and about looking after the players, you know, looking after them to make sure that the players are getting better. Whereas if you're a teacher and your main job is to teach the lads maths and geography, well, that's your main job. No one's going to come in and say, geez, man, half your class failed geography. They don't know where Loch Derg is. And you're like, yeah, but have you seen them clean a breakdown? They're unbelievable. So if you're volunteering and you're, it's always just an additional thing you do. So I don't think the schools that aren't private schools in Limerick or in Cork or in Galway, wherever, I don't think that they're going to have the money to put in a full-time director of rugby. But I thought what Bandon Grammar did a few years ago was really, really sharp, where Bandon Grammar School came together with Bandon RFC, and they came together, they pooled their money, and they brought over Regis Son. He was a coach with Toulouse, and he became the full-time director of rugby across the school and the club. So then he's upskilling all the volunteer coaches, and they have one person who's accountable for it. And that school, man, like, has produced, so like, for a tiny school that rugby was not a big traditional sport, has produced like the likes of Darren Sweetenham, you know Gavin Coombe, you've got the Coombses, you know, these kind of lads. You've got French coming out of there as well. Like, it shows that that's like a little, I don't know if you want to say it, like a little experiment there down in Munster that worked. How do you do is,
yeah,
I don't know.
Do
they say we're going to work together with Ardskill Reach? Do Castlereagh College say we're going to work with
UL Bohemians?
With UL Bohemians, yeah, or something like that? Or,
but why? Surely Munster they're the ones that are going to benefit from this. So where's Munster's view on the whole thing? I mean, when I talk Munster, I'm not talking about some overlord here. I don't know who I'm, because it's not Johan Van.
I think it's a CEO, not an overlord.
Yeah, but like I'm sure his being a new CEO, his main worry is the team. You know, when anyone criticizes Munster as a whole, I don't really know where the finger has been pointed. But like, that is the biggest hole in the whole thing for me at the moment. It's like, where, let's say over the last 10 years, Munster have.
We're saying Munster, but you could apply this to Connacht and Ulster.
Yeah, exactly.
As well.
Sorry. Yeah. So you've got so many players that have come out of Munster over the last 10 years, like myself, like Niall Ronan, Ian Dowling, Barry O'Mahony,
Are you badly name dropping?
Yes, but like a lot of Dennis Leamy, all these players that have come out of Munster, still hovering around the game, that could have easily been picked up and put into a team like Munchins, PBC, Christians, as professional coaches. These guys are bursting with information and knowledge about the game. And there doesn't seem to be any filter for these players to go into coaching or to use their knowledge to give it to young lads. I mean, I went straight out of professional, went to, and coached Castlereagh College kind of off my own back working with UL Bohemians, but there was no structure to it. There's no one in Munster had any interest. And this is a team who'd won the Senior Cup 10 years ago, 11 years ago. And now the game is completely gone from the school. Ardscoil Ríos, the same. The rugby is gone from the school. So when Munster are looking at the youth coming up, where is their control over it, or where is the focus or the effort?
I don't work with Munster men, so yeah. I don't know. But like what you're making it very Munster based.
Yeah.
If you look at this on the upside of this is that by focusing on improving the school and the underage pathway towards the academy, you've seen how well it works in Leinster. Now, it's probably in Leinster, it's done predominantly through the school system, but you don't want to just be focused only on the schools. But if you were to start somewhere, and it's not just Munster, it's the same in Connacht, it's the same in Ulster as well. It's just that Leinster are doing it so well. And by focusing on this, by focusing on developing the pathway from when you pick up rugby ball to when you get to the Leinster Academy at 18 years of age, you can see how good the product is. Like Leinster, to me, are the best team in Europe now at the moment, currently. So, and it's not just on Munster, it's not on the Munster CEO or the Ulster. It's probably something that has to come with the IRFU, with an initiative where I agree with you. I look at someone like Billy Holland, and Billy is a guy who is just, he has so much IP built up in rugby. He's just, you know, he consumes it nonstop. You know, he's an unbelievable work ethic. Billy should be, they should be trying to, like, I was lucky when I fell into coaching, because I retired, I studied, I went over to professional football for a year, and then Anthony Foley rang me and I went straight back into the Munster setup. But that is the exception to the rule. You look at someone like Dennis Leamy now, who retired, you know, he would have started coaching, would be a really knowledgeable coach, and he was coaching like Cashel and Rockwell and, you know, working around with those clubs. But wants to get into the professional game. How does he get into the professional game? He can't. So now he's, Leo Cullen and Leinster have afforded him an opportunity to come in now, and he's coaching with Leinster. But it's very, very hard to get into the professional game. So I know that I was fortunate the way I got into it. But for someone like Billy Holland now, most of those guys, Billy will come out when he eventually does retire. They should not lose the amount of knowledge that he's built up. Or, like, it's good that John Muldoon is coaching now. Like, you could, yeah. I'm conscious that we're talking a lot about Munster because that's what we know the best. But say John Muldoon stepped out, he's now coaching over in Bristol. Hopefully he'll come back and he'll contribute to Connacht. But Billy Holland will get a job, and he'll get a job doing something. He's an intelligent guy, and he'll probably want to keep in touch with rugby. So he might go out and he might end up working with Conn, and he might get a couple of bob for working with Conn. But when he gets under pressure at work, the first thing that will have to get dropped, he won't, when people ask him what he is, he won't say I'm a professional rugby coach. He'll say I'm an engineer or something like that. And I do some work with Cork Conn. I really enjoy it. But when he gets under the pump, then he'll have to, it's the rugby that will suffer. That'll be the first thing he'll have to drop, because he has to focus on his bread and butter. Where if he came out and Christians and Dolphin came together and said, Billy, we want you to be the full-time director of rugby. And then Billy turns around and says, okay, I will. So then he's running the full-time program in Christians, and he's also, you know, the head coach or director of rugby in Dolphin. And he's going in then, and he's sitting with Johan van Gran, and he's sitting with Stephen Larkham and Graham Rowntree, shadowing them. He come back, implements some of that, and then he's monitoring all these players inside in Christians, and he's upskilling them and making sure that they're getting the cutting edge of what rugby coaching is. And then Billy eventually will be like, okay, now I want to coach the Irish 20s. And then he might get that job with the Irish 20s as well. And then he might go in then as an academy coach at Munster and work his way up to being the forwards coach at Munster. That is a good pathway, but that doesn't exist currently. Now, if you were in Leinster, someone like Noel McNamara, and I don't have all of the details of his career path, but I know he was in Clongowes, and he's obviously very, very sharp on rugby. And I don't think it was a sport he played, but picked up on it. And then he's working his way up through the ranks, coaching the Irish 20s, you know, playing really good brand of rugby. He's gone down to New Zealand to upskill. He's come back. He's going to work, you know, he's working his way up. He's involved with Leinster in the, you know, probably working with their A side. And eventually, when Felipe Contecomi goes or someone like that, he's going to be a, he's going to be an option there, and he's going to know the landscape of all of the best players in Leinster because he'll have worked with them all. Mm. Hugh Hogan is a guy who's coaching there in Leinster now at the moment. I don't know Dan Soper's pathway exactly either up in Ulster, the skills coach. But when I watch Ulster play and I see how good their handling is,
yeah.
And I think Trimby was saying he used to work in one of the schools, mm. and now they've brought him in as a dedicated skills coach. That is the way that you will, by creating more people who identify solely as a professional coach, I think that that's how you'll improve the standard and the pathway in Ulster, in Connacht and in Munster, because it's there in Leinster and it is working so well. Think of how crazy some of the people are in the clubs that we know in Limerick. How do you get someone in Bowes to say, listen, you're going to be, we're not going to amalgamate you, but you're going to come together. Your feeder school now is going to be Ardscoil-Reach. And then someone in Shannon will be like, go out of it, That's how we'll make rugby better, you know what I mean?
Mm.
If you're sending your son or your daughter to a school, the main thing you're sending them for is to get an education. And most the schools are pretty good at that. But you'd like them to be in a good rugby program as well. You know, and I think that's putting someone, if someone's accountable for something, it gets measured, and then if they're a good person and they have a good work ethic, they'll figure it out.
Hmm.
And I think that creating those kind of opportunities, it's just financially
difficult to do. It is. It all goes back to money.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sure we're not the first people to point this out and say it's been going on a long time. Even when I was playing, there was talks about why the schools and clubs aren't being, I suppose, looked after by Munster, but it's money. It's financially they can't.
When I was on the other side, when I was in Munster, and I have all the schools and clubs complaining all the time.
Yeah.
I suppose you're so under the pump with trying to get results all the time that you're like, what do you want us to do, man? I suppose my job was to coach the forwards and try and do my best at that.
But provide coaches. Everything you said there just makes perfect sense.
Create a pathway for Indigenous coaches.
Yeah.
And I think that when I get some of my mates that coach underage now, they're really, really into it. I know that you get Paul O'Connell will go down to UL Bowes because his brother Justin is involved down there, and Les Hogan will work with them, and you get things, you know. I took some of the Bowes. My mate Les was coaching Bowes under 10s a couple of years ago, and he was there to me. He's there, listen, and he'd be so into it. We'd go for a walk, and even he'd be like, "I'm just trying to work on their handling and trying to get their transfer time shorter." And I'm like, "This is like, you know, sometimes when you're coaching for a living, it becomes a job a little bit, you know.
Mm.
But then when you see someone who's doing it and how passionate they are about it, I go, "Just this is pretty cool." And he goes, "If I bring the under 10s into the Munster gym someday." Or up to that training centre, will you bring him in? And I said, oh, well, I don't think I'm supposed to do this, but I was like, okay, it'll probably be 8 or 9, 10 young fellas there. I'll take him on a little tour of the training centre and say, look, if you keep working hard, this is where you can end up. When I went down to the front door, there was I would say, every child that had ever played rugby in Bowes was there, and all of their parents, their grandparents, I was like, oh, shit, man, I'm going to lose my job. But I brought them on a little tour of it.
Yeah.
And when we got to, I brought them through the training centre showed them where they get changed, and I said, this is where Conor Murray sits, and you know, if you keep working on your handling and get your passing real crisp, you could be there where Conor Murray's sitting. I worked my way up, and then we got up to the gym, and Paul O'Connell's nephew, Justin's son, Ben O'Connell, was there, and we were in the gym, and I said, okay, this is where, you know, Dave Kilcoyne is always bench pressing, and they're like, Ben, get up there. Ben jumps up and does 12 pull-ups, man.
He's 10.
He does 12 full pull-ups. They've got a chin-up bar at home, man. I was like, oh my, this is good. This is great. Like,
yeah, yeah.
And, but it's, you know, Justin
chin-ups now.
Yeah. Justin would be a really sharp guy who loves his rugby. He would have the benefit of having his brother Paul there.
Yeah.
But you'll get a lot of people like that, but they may not have the same access to the resources that Justin would have. Justin would have a very good rugby knowledge. He'd also have Paul as his brother there, and then he'd be able to like you know, there'd be, like, I think Johan's son trains down in Bowes as well. So, like, Johan is down there. Like, that's how you get access to that kind of upskilling of coaching. But it's for all the people that are out there that really want their kids to enjoy rugby. The more you can give them, the more tools you give to those coaches, the better the players will be.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, you're right, a lot of it will come down to finances, and politically it's difficult. But shit, like, if you want to see how it works, look at how it's working in Leinster.
Look at Leinster. And with Andy Farrell naming a 37-man panel, is it, on Wednesday for the Six Nations?
Yeah, if you're on 37, 38. Yeah.
37, 38. You'd imagine large bulk of those would be Leinster, and his first 15 to start in that Scottish game. I don't know, it's becoming, I mean, where do Munster players fit into that? I mean, Max Deegan now raised his hand to potentially start.
Was it last week? I was like, Caelan Doris has to play international rugby. See, the same through with Max Deegan now.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be really, really interesting.
Ruddock even playing unbelievable.
No, I think, the balance that it's going to be, it's going to be a really, really interesting squad. It's going to be really interesting to see what squad he puts out for that Scottish game.
Yeah.
And the balance that he goes for in his back three, the balance he goes for with his, you know, if Johnny is back, Johnny will start at 10. Who's he going to go for at 9? Who's what the makeup of the back row is going to be? Tyg Byrne's injured now, so who are the locks? You'd imagine at the moment the locks would be Ryan and Henderson. Furlong is probably nailed in there at tight head, maybe with Porter in behind him. Hooker's really up in the air. I still think Niall Scanlon's probably there, just because Leinster are rotating so much between Tracy, Kelleher, Cronin.
Cronin wasn't included in the 45-man squad because he was injured. But he's playing unbelievable. Like, I know he came off the bench again at the weekend, but can't be ruled out either. I mean,
he's
kind of been, since Keller has come on board, he's been pushed aside a little bit in people's
thoughts.
No,
I think he was injured, man.
He was, I think in people's thoughts, everyone's like, right, now we have our winner. It's Keller. We put all invest our money in him, but I wouldn't be writing Sean Cronin off either. And then, as you said, sixth and centre wise, you're probably talking Aki and Henshaw.
Ringrose out, man.
Ringrose has been unbelievable. Back three is going to be like, it's between Conway and Earls, you know. Has Conway done enough maybe to push himself in there? Stockdale and Larmer.
Conway's definitely been form. You mentioned Dave Carney at the start of the show. You can't discount him either. That's why I'm saying I really don't know. That's why Andy Farrell is the head man as he makes those calls.
Cooney again scoring an early try. I thought Murray played brilliantly at the weekend, to be honest. But look, it's that decision. Obviously, we've gone through that a lot. Ulster, look, they do need to win against Bath to nail down that they'll qualify, but it is pretty guaranteed, I think, to qualify.
Kutsia was incredible again at the weekend. Mm. The difference, the fact they didn't have him when they played Munster and they were so dominant.
Yeah.
19 carries, 10 tackles.
Yeah, he was
got massive momentum, man. Yeah. When he carries the ball, like,
he's like a,
yeah, just drops his shoulder. Like,
just like bouncing off people.
Yeah. How good was Camille Chatt? I was literally, I was sitting beside my old fella watching the game. I was in the pub and Camille Chatt came on, this neck, like this, and I was there, this guy is seriously powerful. Yeah. And they heard me say it and they were like this, they're like, he's only got two legs. And I was there, what the fuck, man, you know what I mean? Like, I know he's only got two legs. And next minute he carried the ball, he went bing, 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 like through a load of lads.
He's so
powerful. I thought their replacement hooker was really good as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Donnacha Ryan was on to me about working with one of their hookers, I think it was a summer or two ago, or at some stage during the season. He said, "Would you mind doing some throwing with one of the young hookers there in in Racing. He said he's a really good guy. I don't know whether it's this guy Teddy. I think it might have been him, but he was really impressive when he came on. So
you didn't do it?
I think there was something like there was that they couldn't come over himself, and he was going to come over with Dunica, and Dunica just said he's a really good guy.
But
I think the fact that Dunica Ryan didn't feature was also a massive bonus for Munster. Dominic Bird missed 4 or 5 tackles in the game. Munster missed 43 tackles in the game.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot.
Now, the one thing is, it's a lot more difficult to defend on 4G. Because on a grass pitch, when you're running with the ball, there's a certain amount on the grass pitch, a certain amount of the momentum. When you're putting your foot into the ground, the power is being dissipated through the turf. But on 4G, it just comes back up and just propels you forward faster. Yeah. So it's harder to defend. So when you're playing on 4G, you want to have the ball.
Yeah.
But I was impressed with Racing's accuracy.
Yeah.
Their handling was really, really sharp.
Yeah, ridiculously sharp. Mm. As you said, Fagatawa, I think
we didn't even mention Iribram.
the pass.
It's like they were like, "Well, what did you make your man's pass?" I said, "That's the kind of thing when I'd see guys messing before training. I'd be like, stop throwing those stupid passes. You know? Work on your breakdown, work on your clean outs, work on your tackling."
Yeah,
it was insane. He was brilliant, and then Machino was brilliant as well when he came on.
Come on, yeah.
It was like for them to be able to. To have him on the bench, a Munster at Craig Casey, who I don't think had ever played in Europe before.
Yeah.
You know? And I know he has to start somewhere, and Craig will be brilliant.
Mm.
But it just gives you an idea. And
that's why I think to be still ahead in the 72nd minute, being under that much pressure is fucking impressive. Like.
Yeah, it is. It is, but it's...
It was disappointing to leak those last two tries and for them to jump to 39 points.
The margins are always incredibly fine.
Yeah.
Incredibly fine. Like, when we got to, like I said, last year, I reckon if Simmons, the Exeter number 8, had not done his ACL at the start of the year, I don't know, would we have beaten Exeter?
Okay, yeah.
If Billy Holland hadn't stolen that line out, we wouldn't have gone through.
Yeah.
The year before, we got through, but like if Conway hadn't scored that freak try against Toulon, we wouldn't have gotten to the semis. You know, like it's the margins are so fine and people don't seem to respect that. They kind of just, they get annoyed at Munster for, why didn't you get to the final? I'm like, do you think the team is going, is performing maximally to get to the semi-finals?
The pressure is off now, essentially, if they don't get to the quarterfinals, after next weekend, that they... Like, the reason they're dropping those balls and that they're not, I suppose...
I'm going to get my pen back when I threw that offload.
Is that now it gives them the time to maybe to do what Dan McFarland has done and change the philosophy of how they play and do it with less pressure, because having to go into a quarterfinal and potentially a semi-final, they're going to be under serious pump to do that and to maybe... play a tighter game, whereas now for the rest of the season, obviously they need to win the Pro 14 or they'll want to win it and they'll need to qualify for Europe. But I would love to see them expand their game plan and take the shackles off a bit.
Yeah, well, looking at what like Ulster were going down there, like had like all the shit that happened to them off the field, and then and then the fact that they were performing poorly as well, they hit like rock bottom. And then Dan came in, and it took a while, but they've built, and now they're on an upward curve. But you've got to almost go like, this is it, this is where we are, this is realistically where we are. I don't think Munster are in that position at all.
No, but this is their opportunity to do it. You know, you see what I mean. Dan hasn't brought in a huge amount of players to get Ulster to where they are. He's Cossia was there. He's brought in Will Addison, Fadez. Has he added it? But he's taken that group of players.
Marty Moore,
and
Eric O'Sullivan,
Jack McGrath. But I mean, it's.
I understand what I'm saying is that Ulster were miles off the pace, in my opinion. I don't think Munster are miles off the pace. They just haven't. They didn't qualify for Europe. And they had a tough group, and when you lose someone like if if Racing didn't have Finn Russell yesterday, like, they probably would have had Trindukender or something like that. But, you know, that would have been a big change for them. Like, Munster didn't have Joey in there, who's probably their...
If Racing didn't have Fakatawa, it would have been a different game.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah.
So I don't think Munster are, like... I don't think Munster are at a rock bottom. They're certainly not. I think they have a really good chance of going on to win the league. I think that... I think they'll double down their efforts now. And I'm not sure what you're saying about, like, saying... Like, if they believed in their game plan at the start of the year, there's no reason to say just because they didn't qualify in Europe, well... Right, let's get rid of that game plan now. Because if you're the coaches, come in on Monday morning now and they sit there and they go, I'm presuming that Munster are out of Europe. They go, we're out of Europe. Our game plan is wrong. Let's rip it up and start a new one mid season. I'm not sure that will work.
I would hate to think that Munster would have a game plan that would not involve being able to throw those sweep passes accurately 10 to 15 times a game and be a threat in attack more than one or two passes. That's the level they need to get to, and that's proven by how the teams that are winning every competition and winning these quarters and semi-finals, that their ability to play, like you said, like Finn Russell can do anything. This is what I think... in my opinion, is where the next step and you know, these players, I suppose the Munster philosophy has always been play 10-man rugby or from the outside looking in.
It doesn't work
or,
anymore, man.
It doesn't, yeah. And we need to just push it aside and move on. Penny, when he was brought in, he probably went too far trying to bring it from side to side and bringing that Crusaders game plan. But it was very expansive, but the players became better players in that 12 months. There was no doubt about it. You saw players handling the ball twice as much, if not more, than they would in a normal game. So it's very doable. And Ulster are a prime example, and Connacht were a prime example of it when they did it a few years ago. And Glasgow have done it. And it would excite me to think that Munster could take, and I think the players would respond well to it. Could take that attitude and play a little bit more rugby.
I agree with you, but like, I if you're setting up sweet passes and the players don't execute them, what's the point there? Yeah. Like, is that on the players? My point was that, like, I felt that by saying that Stephen Larkham has come in and that, you know, it'll take the players time to get used to him, I was like, but me passing the ball to you with Pat McCarry as the coach or with Eddie Jones as the coach, I still have to pass the ball too. If I pass it over your head or throw it behind you, like, it just because I've changed coaches doesn't mean I forgot how to pass.
Yeah.
You know, so like that's, I was just, my point was like, you can't use the fact that you've changed coaches as a crutch or as an excuse for players when they just don't do basics well.
Mm-hmm.
And the players just need to pick up on those things. You know, like, they are very, very good players. I don't think Munster are at rock bottom. I think that they had an incredibly hard group. So from the start of the year, you go, this is going to be hard. Every year, you kind of go, this is going to be really tough to get out of our group. So when we get out of our group and get any way in the competition, if you get to the semi-finals, you're one of the top four teams in Europe. That's amazing. You know what I mean? It's just understanding how difficult it is to actually get there. Now, they haven't gotten there this year. Let's presume they haven't gotten there this year. They still have the nucleus of a very strong squad there. Maybe they do need to tweak their game plan. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the weekend was obviously not good enough.
Yeah.
The effort was excellent, but the accuracy.
Yeah, well, still doable next weekend against the Ospreys in Thomond Park. Connacht, we better touch on them before we move on. In a similar situation, out of the Champions Cup now, potentially not as strong squad depth as well. Did you see any positives from that loss against Toulouse?
Positives. The fact that it was 21-7.
Yeah.
But like, Toulouse ended up with 13 players at the end of the game. Like we said at the very start, it's like you said, squad depth. They're losing when they've had injuries. I think they had the start Kearns ahead of Blade. I think that could be his first European start, is it?
Yeah.
I think it's his first European start because Blade is playing non-stop, man. And they just couldn't handle the Toulouse power. Now Toulouse, I thought, were really impressive, not just because their carriers were offloading all the time and using a bit of footwork on the gain line. They were clever with the way they played, and then when push came to shove, and Toulouse emptied their bench, bring on Rory Arnold, Movaca, Bezzi, you know, they'd Entomac, they'd Huge, and then they went down to 13 players. With Zach Holmes getting sent off and Huge's yellow card, and still Connacht couldn't break him down. Now, I thought Connacht started. I thought Toulouse started well, and then Connacht got right back in the mix. Adi Alokin, if he'd gotten that try on the hack through, I think that could have been a big turning point. But they still went ahead. Their mall has been decent this year.
What was the update on Conor Fitzgerald's injury? Is that long term?
No, I don't think he's out long term. But yeah,
okay.
I don't know whether he'll be back in time for next week.
Yeah, I think Jack Carty, he needs a run of games for Connacht. I think he came out during the week and said his confidence was down, his energy was down after the World Cup. Needs a bit of time. Hopefully, he can get Tom Farrell back. I think he's a very important player for them. Alton Delan did come off injured, but playing very well. I would think he might be included in Andy Farrell's.
Connacht need is big ball carriers in their pack. Because of the way they play, they need someone that can just carry the ball, get them on the front foot, and then they're all running onto the ball injecting, because they're you can see they're well drilled, well coached in terms of shape, but they rely heavily on the shape, and if they don't get momentum, then it's just they all drop back into their shape, and then the ball goes out to their back line and the opposition defence is just running onto them.
Yeah.
I thought they got outworked in that, looking at it, Toulouse's front five had 65 carries, Connacht had 35. Now Connacht don't play around the corner, so they won't have as many carries, but even in the back row, Toulouse had like 40 carries versus 18 from Connacht. So you know, it's attritional, that when the opposition are holding the ball and it's that hard to stop them, and they weren't just mutant ball carriers, they're mutant ball carriers with skill, and then they just empty their bench, and at the end the fact that Connacht couldn't break them down was disappointing. But again, finances. But it goes back to our point.
Fainga linked to move to Lyon as well next year, which would be a disaster for them.
Yeah.
Definitely one of their best players. But sorry, it goes back to your point.
It goes back to the point around, you don't want to have to compete with the French clubs financially at senior level. You know what I mean? You don't want to have to say, okay, well, where are we now as a team at the end of the year, wash up with Connacht and go, listen, we need to come up with another 2.4 million to sign five more players. You know, that's not where, if you took that money and invested it over 5 years, that 2.5 million, invested that into the schools and clubs, you just see how much you get out of it when you look at the Leinster model. And then it means that you invest that money over 5 years rather than 1 year, and then you just keep reaping the rewards from it. Summing it up, I don't know.
Amen.
Yeah,
I agree. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back in a minute with Black and White.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
All right, welcome back, and it's time for Black and White. For this week's Black and White, we're going to do the best 15 funniest lads we've played with. So it's like a comedy 15.
Yes.
Right.
Who's the best crack?
The best crack. 15, the best C-bombs out there. Okay, I'm going to let you go first, then I might steal some of yours.
Okay.
So crack, are we talking like to laugh at, to laugh with, that good at making jokes, just general?
Lads who were just good in the squad, funny. So okay. I went Kilcoyne at Loosehead.
For just,
he's just fucking hilarious.
Maniac.
He's just hilarious. At hooker, I had a lot of competition.
A funny position.
Funny position. So John Fogarty.
Hilarious, yeah.
Dennis Fogarty.
Yeah, same cloth.
Sean Cronin. Bernard Jackman, Frankie Sheehan, all very funny, but I went with Dennis Foggs.
Yeah.
Tight heads.
That laugh, a very infectious laugh.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Not an awful lot of very funny tight heads.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with, maybe a little bit racist, I went with Freddie Pucciarello because he's foreign and probably not, was his grasp of English wasn't great.
Yes.
But that led to an awful lot of funny shit that he said then.
Correct.
And then I went in the row.
I remember Fetty, we were playing that game. We were on a drinking a session, a bit of a party, whatever. And we're playing that drinking game where you lay all the cards out in a circle. It's called
Circle of Death.
Circle of Death.
Yeah.
So, Pat, you lay the cards out in a circle face down, and then you pick up a card, and each one has a different meaning. Mm. There's a pint glass in the middle, and you fill it, and the last one to pick up a king downs it. And there's a one in it where you've to make a rhyme, and you're playing with Fetty, and his grasp of English is flaccid, but it's so poor that his take in this game was just all over the shop. But the make a rhyme is like a rap or something, so you go like rat, cat, fat,
class rap,
sat, or whatever.
Spitting bars there, Barry.
Yeah,
folks, rhyme. You're a musician. With secret rhyme. You're a musician.
And it got to Fetty. It was like we're trying to explain it to him. So we're like, so fat, rat, cat, and then it's like sounds like. So you have to do like sounds like that. So cat. So now you're up, and he was like, oh, okay. Meow. I don't know. And then he picked that card next, and he had to do one that we all had to rhyme with. And he goes, aeroplane. How the fuck do you rhyme
fuck
with that?
Sake. Second rows, I went Donica Callahan.
Yeah.
Because he's a funny bastard. And then next second row, I had Mal O'Kelly. But I also put like Tom Bowman in there as well. Do you remember Big Tom Bowman, the Australian? Yeah. Just because it was like training every day for Tom Bowman was a laugh because he didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
And then because Alan Gaffney was coaching us, so we're all a bit afraid of him at the time. We were like, oh my God, he doesn't give a shit what Alan Gaffney says to him. Like
smoking darts and arsing around.
Blindside flanker, I went Alan Quinlan because he's very, very funny.
Mm-hmm.
Wally. Because he's Wally at seven.
Funniest man alive.
At eight, I was stuck. I went from the professional side, I went Stephen Keogh. But I really want to put Davy Quinlan in there from Shannon because he's so funny as well.
Yeah.
When we're on.
So who'd you go with?
I'm going to go with. What I might do is I might just drop Wally and put Davy in at seven.
Okay.
Nine.
What, were you going to say something funny about Davey there?
No, just whenever you go on a stag, he's always like literally the funniest guy ever on a stag.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, you should just do this for a living, man. Just go on stags professionally and just follow them around.
I ended up crashing his stag in Vegas. He got married in Vegas and I was out there on a holiday and I'd never met him before. And Mossy and Quinny were on it and they were like, oh, give me a shout. And they're like, we're over here in a stag, do you want to join us? And we fell madly in love for that 24 hours. He's hilarious.
I went Tomás O'Leary at nine.
Yep.
10, I went with Conrad O'Sullivan.
Oh, yeah.
Conrad, not always a 10, but absolutely funniest man ever. Yeah. Going through left wing, I went Trimby.
Surprisingly, people think he's no crack, but
I'm still getting that, man. People in the public are going, Trimble is actually very, very funny, you know. I thought he was like just very religious. And I was like, yeah, I know, fucking hell. 12 was difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I went with Jimmy Docks, James Dorn, Munchies.
Was he a 12? I thought he was a 7.
He's a
doesn't
7,
matter.
But he's playing 12 now for us. he should be lucky to get in this. He's lucky to get in this team, man, because of the quality. But he's very, very funny.
Yeah.
13. I went with Barry Murphy because you're here.
Yeah.
And on the right wing, I went Fergus McFadden, and then I got stuck because there are no funny fullbacks. There is no.
They don't exist. I literally could not.
Let's go through them. Start from the very start. Dominic Crotty. Great guy.
Yeah.
Not funny.
Nope.
Gervin Dempsey. Great guy.
Yeah.
Not funny.
Funny. Sean Payne. Yep.
Great guy. Not funny.
Yep.
Rob Kearney. Brilliant under the high ball. Not funny. Gavin Duffy.
Yes.
Great guy.
Wow, they're very similar.
Thin.
People.
Not funny.
Yeah.
Felix Jones. Intense. Sometimes he can be funny, but
yeah.
Too intense.
Too much of a nerd.
I'm struggling, man.
Yeah.
I'm really struggling. I literally don't have a 15.
I put Wally 15 as my captain. Just because.
David Wallace.
Yeah. Just because there is so. There's such a gap of at 15 that I needed something outrageous. So, and I want him to be captain as well because he's.
That's kind of a little bit of bollocks, man. You just put a back row at
he fullback. Played in the fucking centre for Munster. So.
He played in the wing.
He played
in the wing. Wally was, or Liam, he was the centre. Okay, go on, give me your 15.
I went with Fede as well in the front row. I went with Dennis Foggs. Sorry, I didn't know we had to mention each other. I left you out.
Yeah, fuck, I don't want to be in there.
You'd be in there. Ronnie McCormack, who played for Leinster, I put him in because I felt like he was always trying to take advantage of me anytime I played with him, like financially. Sorry. Oh, okay.
Yeah, all right.
Like, hey, Baz, do you want to play an old game of poker? I don't know how to play poker. It's grand. Sit in there. You know, he was like hilarious man, but yeah, very old school. I went with Dunners. I went with O'Connell. O'Connell makes me laugh a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Ken O'Connell, I put in at six.
I think the O'Connell is same as Felix. They're funny, but the intensity kind of overspills a little bit.
Yeah, but very silly at the same time. I went with Ken O'Connell, former Munster in Ireland.
Great call.
Put him in at six. I love the story about him playing for Ireland against France and in Paris, and they were hammered, and Richard Harris came into the dressing room after the game, and they got to know each other and went on the piss. And Ken ended up staying with Richard Harris for 3 days in Paris.
What?
Missed the flight home, got dropped the following week. Yeah, just went on a bit of a bender with him. As you'd have to do if it was Richard Harris, right?
Yeah.
So Ken, straight in there. Went with Niall Ronan at seven. Hilarious man.
Yeah, that would have been a good one. Yeah.
Just constant gags. I went with Garrett Noonan, mate of mine, who was our number eight in school. Played for Shannon, won many AALs with Shannon. Hilarious man, gets himself into awful situations. I went with Mike Prendergast at scrum half. Just
a different type of funny.
Yeah.
And also a brilliant attack coach, no?
Yeah. I put stuck Tomás in out half because I struggled with out halves as well.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to fullbacks. So Tomás has played a little bit of 10, so you can go in there. Went with Rob Henderson at 12.
Yes.
Who was a hilarious man. I went with Mike Mullins at 13. Because he was not a funny fella really, but he did the most hilarious thing I've ever seen, where in Thomond Park, when he was doing his going away goodbye to the audience, who were like thousands of people on the pitch after a game, they gave him the microphone to say goodbye, and everyone told him to sing, and he sang Creep by Creep by Radiohead.
It's so weird,
to 10,000 people. It's on YouTube, man. You should, anyone look this up. It was the most bizarre but hilarious moment. I don't know if he did it trying to be funny. I picked Keith Earls in the wing because everything that comes out of his mouth is hilarious. Trimby on the other wing, and Wally captain fullback.
You cheated at 15, but at least you got a 15. I only got 14.
We could just leave them out. Just the retire the jersey as no crack.
We've got to try and find a funny. I wonder if Jordan Amore or Stockdale, are they funny?
Addison is funny.
Oh.
Straight in there, Will. Sorry.
We'll have them, so.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay.
All right, that's a great one. Enjoyed that. Anyone want to get in touch and tell us their hilarious 15? Doesn't matter if we've never heard of them, just stick them in. Any funny stories, let us know. Trimby has now lit the Facebook page up, so Trimby will keep on that, so get in touch there as well. Cheers to everybody for listening, and for those watching on YouTube. That was a really enjoyable show. To everyone that helped organise the show today, to Alan, to Dermot, to Anthony and to Pat, thanks a million. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. We'll be back next week with Jerry and myself and Trimby.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.